Hey, everybody. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Modern Week podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Very tired.
Well, have we got a topic then? I'm sure that you'll love.
Oh, I'm sure.
All right. Well, let's do promote extend trade. And on this day in 1978, the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special was aired on CBS. Lord. Mm-hmm. It got panned, horrible ratings, and basically George Lucas tried to steal it away in a vault like the Animaniacs. And it was supposed to be forever, but of course the internet happened. And people upload their bootlegs onto places like YouTube, and it's all light again. And for as bad as it was, it did introduce a bunch of things that turned out to be pretty important in the Star Wars pre-Disney universe. Basically, Boba Fett and the Wookiee homeworld of Kashyyyk. So in honor of Kashyyyk, which is pretty much impossible to spell without looking it up.
K-A-S-H-Y-Y-K.
Three Y's.
Fuck!
So in honor of that, who are we going to promote extend trade of these Mets players with equally impossible names to spell?
Uh-oh.
First, we have Kevin Kaczmarski. Then we have Kirk Nieuwenhuis. And lastly, Adani Echevarria.
It's not a great list.
Well, I tried to pick guys that are equally shitty.
I think I could do Nieuwenhuis off the top of my head. Nieuwenhuis?
Nope.
Damn it.
Nieuwenhuis?
Nope.
Ah!
No E.
No E. It's, damn it.
Nieuwenhuis.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but he did play football.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. I'm gonna, just solely because of that, I don't know if you got, oh, I'm sure you do, you remember that comeback in 2015 against the Nationals, where he, took Jonathan Papelbon and his stupid face deep late, how he lost his mind on the call. Dilson is like screaming in the dugout as Nieuwenhuis gets back. So I'm going to extend Nieuwenhuis just for that. Kaczmarski or Echevarria? Crap.
I feel like Echevarria's had a big league career.
That's true. Yeah, so I guess extend Etch and then trade Kaczmarski.
Who is a big leaguer, just not necessarily one of consequence yet.
Or probably ever, but...
Yeah. Not impossible, but not likely.
Trying not to be overly critical there, but yeah. Yeah, I extended Kirk, just because his, Mets career was kind of flashy in the pan, but I mean it did happen. I did forget that Echevarria did have pretty decent, fairly long career. Who did he come up with? The Marlins or the Blue Jays?
So he was with the Blue Jays, and they traded him for Reyes.
With Reyes.
I don't think he ever debuted with I don't think he ever played for the Blue Jays. The weird thing about his career is that like he supposedly was this elite defender, and the metrics never backed it up for years and years. It's like, was he just really bad, or are the metrics just really off? Don't know.
All right, well, yeah, there's three equally Scrabble names for you. I guess Kaczmarski would get you the highest Scrabble score because of the Z.
Was that the criteria we were using?
Oh, no. I mean, it's whatever criteria you want, but just looking at them. I'm just trying to remember. I kind of had him confused with Echevarria, but there was the Cuban shortstop dude from maybe a decade ago or so, the early 2010s, who signed with the Dodgers. And off the top of my head, I don't remember how to pronounce his name, but it was equally crazy. Arua Barena.
Mm-hmm. I remember who you're talking about.
He would have fit in very well.
How do you spell that?
Do you want to try it?
No.
Aerospell? No, I'm making sure this is the right player. Aerospell Arua Barena.
Mm-hmm.
Arruebarrena. Arua Barena.
Yeah, it's too bad that he never was a Met because he would have been a nice...
Nice pick.
...addition to this group here.
He got a grand total of 45 at-bats in the major leagues with a strikeout rate of 37.8. Not great.
Yeah, nope. All right, well, moving on now. This week, we are going to be going over Binghamton. And a few years ago, 2017, they rebranded. They went from being the Binghamton Mets to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. And there was all that excitement surrounding the team, win, lose, whatever. It was still kind of new, novel, fun, Rumble Ponies, yeah. 2018, they had a certain Heisman Trophy award-winning outfielder. And there was some excitement surrounding the team as a result of that. But last season, 2019, there was really nothing interesting going on in that regard. They had a new coach, Kevin Bowles, but whatever. No one gets really excited for, you know, managers or coaching staffs, unless your new manager is Carlos Beltran, I guess. But they did have a bunch of prospects. They were not all necessarily exciting prospects, but there were a bunch of them with a few marquee names. There was Andres Jimenez, who was our second best prospect coming to the season. There was David Peterson. He was our fourth best. Anthony Kay, our 10th best. Stephen Valines, our 17th best. And Will Toffey, who we ranked 21 coming into the season. And in addition to them, there are a couple of borderline guys like Carol Gonzalez, Ryder Ryan, Adonis Uceda that started with the team, whatever you want to consider him, you know, farmhand, prospect, whatever. Mickey Janis, everyone loves knuckleball pitchers. So, you know, it might not have been an exciting bunch necessarily, but it seemed like it was a pretty solid group that had won some ball games. And things did start off good. They went 11-8 in April, and then they went 19-11 in May, including a combined no-hitter thrown by Harrell and Ryder Ryan. And for most of the first half, since this was the first year that the Eastern League instituted a split season format, they jockeyed with the Trenton Thunder, the Reading Fightin' Phils, and the Hartford Yard Goats for first place, but they hit a skid in June and they ended the first half 35-29, which was good for fourth place. Things went downhill in the second half. Most notably, they lost Harrell and Anthony Kay, both of whom are having great seasons. They kind of did get some replacements in the form of Kevin Smith and Tony DeBrell coming up from St. Lucie, but the two of them were not able to produce same kind of numbers that Harrell and Kay were doing. It was really DeBrell that was dragging the combined production down. He posted a 9.31 ERA in 40 innings, which is really, really, really bad. So the team was kind of solid in July. They went 16-13, but they really plummeted in August. They won 10 games and lost 21, and they ended up going 32-44 in the second half, which is dead last in the division. And in a segment later on the show, I'm going to talk with one of our team members, John Trupin, about this, but I'll bring it up now. Binghamton was in the pits when it came to attendance. They drew the fewest fans in the entire Eastern League, and that's a trend that goes back years and years and years. And it's a combination of things. The weather up there in Binghamton is, you know, not great in April and May. It's pretty cold. Binghamton itself, not necessarily the best place, you know, a few other factors, but basically with all the changes that Major League Baseball is saying they want to happen in the minors, Binghamton is kind of under threat of being contracted, for lack of better words. According to Bill Madden from the Daily News, like we and a lot of other people were kind of guessing a few weeks ago when all these kind of crazy changes were announced. You know, the Cyclones, Brooklyn Cyclones, are basically going to become the new AA team, since the New York Penn League is going to be eliminated. And the Binghamton Rumble Ponies are just going to poof, disappear. And ironically, Binghamton is hosting the Eastern League All-Star Game next season. So if Rob Manfred's plan to basically ruin minor league baseball is pushed through, like as it's been presented, it's basically going to be a Binghamton farewell tour in addition to an All-Star game. So overall, what did you guys think of, you know, we'll get to individual players in a little bit, but did you find Binghamton exciting, kind of boring, the team you forgot, the team you're most interested in? What did you guys think?
There are a lot of teams on the Mets that
they were mildly interesting for a bit. You know, obviously we followed Anthony Kay's season very closely.
Oh boy. Some of us more closely than others.
In more ways than one. but yeah, you know, Kay was there. Peterson was there. Jimenez was there. I'd say mildly interesting, but also kind of sad.
I mean, it'd be a lot more interesting if Jimenez and Peterson had been good, which neither of them were.
Yeah, no, that was really just the offense as a whole was just really bad. I mean, who is the league leader? Not the league leader, the team leader here.
Okay.
Braxton Lee.
All right, they got a minor league Rule 5 draft pick.
Yeah, he led the team batting average at the .275 batting average. Hmm.
Jason Krizan was the best hitter on the team by WRC plus. Edgardo Fermin had a good 40 plate appearances or so.
Not bad.
He hit .314, .390, .457 in 42 plate appearances. Interesting. Not really. But yeah, there were a lot of org guys on this team.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick Mazeika, he led the team in 16 homers. So, yeah. Puts things in perspective. A lot of minor league free agents, a lot of kind of independent filler guys. And that, you know, when you start looking at, you know, how the Mets draft and how there's a lot of guys that get weeded out fairly early in the process because, you know, they were not identified correctly. You know, I don't know the best way of putting that, but, you know, when they were drafted, they were thought of as being better than they actually were, so they get weeded out much earlier than they probably should if the team was drafting a bit better. And that's how you wind up with, you know, a double-A team with the likes of Jason Krizan and Barrett Barnes and Braxton Lee and Dario Pizano and Arizmendi Alcantara. That was a pretty good, actually, pickup minor league free agent. Because he is still kind of young, and he did actually have a decent season. Mm-hmm. And in theory, you know, that maybe is a little bit of life there. But
he could have been like the speed guy off the bench in the playoffs, but or Braxton Lee could have been that. But
Sam Haggerty.
All yeah, right, I forgot about Sam Haggerty. That trade is so pathetic. Right, it's like Walker Lockett and Sam Haggerty are so entirely forgettable, but Pawecki was so unbelievably bad that we've just not thought about it at all.
Yeah, it's a net neutral. Pawecki was pretty terrible, but also we didn't really get much for him, so.
No.
Whatever.
Apparently, I don't recall lists at all. But apparently, a guy named Alfredo Escalera Maldonado played in 7 games for Binghamton.
Who?
Exactly.
Whomst?
Alfredo Escalera Maldonado.
How do we spell that one? Maldonado is fairly easy, but the middle one might be a challenge. Escalera. Escalera. Okay, man, not that hard. Escalera. Escalera.
Ca. Close enough.
Whatever.
Well, yeah. Huh. And I mean, we follow. You know, we kind of micromanage things at AA with our everyday daily prospect reports, and I have no recollection of this guy.
I wonder if he just, like...
He also played in 14 games for St. Lucie, too.
What the hell?
Oh, he's one of the up-and-down guys.
How many days do we combine for? I had 2 days a week.
I had two.
Yeah, two? How many do you have, Steve?
Two, I think, yeah.
So, how the hell did we miss this guy? If we're having 6 days of the week, how did we...
He must have only played on the days that Thomas was doing it.
Uh-huh. Played once a week.
Well, Alfredo Escalera, if you're listening, come on the pod. Tell us about your time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was riveting.
We apparently all three missed it, so would love to hear about it.
I drove through Binghamton or past Binghamton for while going upstate recently. There's not a lot up there. I'd like to know what they do when they're not playing baseball.
Meth.
Exist in the vast void that is New York north of...
I'm sure they all golf.
Ugh.
Oh, the players.
Probably, yeah.
Never mind. When they're not playing. Then. Yeah, I don't think the players are doing meth.
Literally. Nice. And, like, you can't even speculate about the population because it's, like, a college town. So during the summer months when they're playing baseball, there's literally no one there.
Sounds about right. That's probably why their attendance is so awful.
Yeah, as I speak with John about this kind of stuff, we go into it a little bit more detail later. But it's a combination of a lot of things. The college being, you know, it being a college town is a pretty big thing. Binghamton is extremely, extremely, extremely poor.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a big factor as well. And when it's like, you know,
I mean, from
50 degrees in May, who wants to go out?
From a pure profit margin, yeah, it probably doesn't make sense to have a team in Binghamton. But... is that really what we're using the criteria for minor league baseball is now?
It apparently is.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break here. And after these messages, we'll go over some of the individual performances from the 2019 Binghamton Rumble Puppies.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Steve Slipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Wahus and Ken Levin. And if you joined us earlier, you know, Binghamton 2019 season, not the best. But there were some solid players, prospects, farmhands, whatever you want to call them. So let's just kind of briefly go over everybody and give me some quick opinions about if you feel that their stock is up, down, or holding, I guess. First, we have Andres Jimenez, who hit 250, 309, 387 in 117 games with 9 homers and 28 stolen bases in 44 attempts. As we've gone over a few times on the podcast and on the actual site itself, we know that Jimenez's swing kind of got tinkered with. It did have its intended effect because it did hit 9 homers, which is the most that he's ever hit. But obviously his batting average plummeted. So he kind of recovered a little bit in the AFL, but don't know if that's just kind of short sample size statistical noise. We do know that his swing did get cleaned up a little bit, so maybe you know, the result of that is why he hit 340-something and won the AFL batting title. But whatever the case may be, do you guys – what do you think? Stock up, down, or holding? As compared to, you know, this time last season, I guess.
I think it's down, but I'm not sure if it should be as down as it is. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying. I kind of
like. I think a lot has been made about him having a bad season when it was really just a meh season, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when I was doing the best players I saw write-ups for Jimenez, which was posted last Monday, he ended up with a WRC plus of 105, which
like is not
is
ideal.
Still above, right? I mean, it's not what you know, want your top prospect or second best prospect or whatever he was.
Especially when he's like a hit tool dependent guy, and that the variance on that is going to be a little higher.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, when you're 5% better than league average, that's still better than league
average. Yeah, it's not a disaster. Like,
how old is he still?
20.
He's
21 now.
Okay.
But it was his age 20 season. He's like just turned 21.
It's totally fine.
Yeah, I agree. He's still very young. I still am a very strong believer in the glove.
And the speed.
But really, like, he's a special defender, is what I've always taken away from seeing him play. Like, he gets to a lot of balls that you would be, you know, you would think would end up hits.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's probably closer to, like, the back end of the top 100 prospects in baseball. I would probably argue on a true talent level should be, like, 60 or something.
Yep.
To put text, like,
I would honestly make the argument that his stock should not be down at all. It should be holding, but I would say a lot of the time prospects turn into, if you're not improving, you're getting worse. So I think. I honestly don't see much difference between him now and where he was last season. But I suspect the minor effects of prospect fatigue will knock him like 20 spots down lists, roughly, when they really probably shouldn't.
Yeah, a lot of his value is tied. Well, not tied, but a lot of his value is in the glove. And there were no, you know, in the couple of games that I saw him play and just the games that I watched online or just saw, you know, GIFs of whatever, there was no real drop in defensive ability.
But the dude still projects as, like, a plus at short. Like, I don't want to throw a plus-plus on it, but it's a...
He's a damn good shortstop.
Right, mm-hmm. Like, that... And he should be able to hit at least a little bit. Yeah. That alone is already a major leaguer. He can also steal a base. Like, that's a useful player without much improvement.
I think I'm also more confident in the glove than I have been, you know, for most shortstop prospects in a while. Just having, like, seen him make plus shortstop plays look semi-routine, you know?
Yeah, you don't ever hear his name being linked with, you know, may have to move off the position. You know, center field may be an option.
Now you hear May.
He has like he has like a polish that Rosario didn't. You know,
mm-hmm.
And Rosario still doesn't have.
Yeah, shortstop. I don't know if it's realistic to think it's going to happen at that point, but he's fine.
All right, now next up, David Thompson. He posted a 4.19 ERA in 116 innings. With 119 hits allowed, 37 walks issued, and 122 strikeouts. Up, wait. Down, or holding?
Wait, who?
David Peterson?
David Peterson.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes a lot more sense.
I do that a lot because...
like, When did he converge to pitching?
We should make like a swear jar, but for when Steve does that with David Thompson and David Peterson.
I do that pretty often. I don't know why either.
Just those two.
Down, I think. Because the same idea I just applied to Jimenez, that being that if you're not improving, you're getting worse. I think that does start to become true once you get to a certain age in terms of prospect status, and Peterson is there, and it seems like this is what he is. Doesn't strike a ton of guys out, doesn't have elite control, gives up a lot of hits.
Yeah, just like thoroughly unexciting.
The thing is, he did strike out a lot of guys, and he did have a pretty good walk ratio. I think
he had a good season.
The
stuff still doesn't really pop. You know,
I'm saying in terms of like major league projection, I don't think he strikes out a lot of guys, nor do I trust his control.
Yeah, I mean, he I don't think that, you know, if you put him in a major league either bullpen or rotation right now and just let him good, bad, whatever over the course of an entire season, probably 6 to 7 Ks per nine, which is not terrible, terrible, but yeah, it's not great either.
Who else was on that infield for Binghamton?
Michael Paez, Patrick Mazaika.
I wonder if he got into any games as a catcher, Paez.
Louis Carpio.
So it's not a bad defensive infield,
Andres
it seems
Jimenez.
Like, because I'm looking at the line right now, and like he gave up a lot of hits, but it's 340 BABIP. Some of that might be due to the defenders behind him. At the same time, he also gave up a 20% line drive rate, which, not great, Bob.
Yeah, I think that's more of a lack of, like, dynamic strikeout stuff than...
And it seems like he's the kind of guy who just either exists around the zone, in which case he won't walk a lot of people but will give up strikes. And at this level, his stuff is good enough to induce an occasional swing and miss. But if he continues to live this much in the zone as he goes up, this stuff won't fool people anymore. The strikeouts will go down. He'll continue to get hit harder. He might start to nibble more and then walk more guys. Not dissimilar to, oh my God. My brain. My Check mind, brain.
Corey Oswald, Chris Flexen,
Rafael Montero is who I was
Montero,
thinking. Yeah.
Basically every like kind of back end rotation starter that the Mets have promoted.
Yeah.
The last,
like Montero
5 years.
Montero put up these great minor league stat lines because he could fill up the zone with his mediocre fastball and a decent changeup, and like no one in the minors can hit even an okay changeup. And then suddenly he gets to the major leagues where guys can hit an okay changeup. And he can't exist in the zone as much anymore, so he starts to nibble.
I could see I could see Peterson. I did it again.
Yep.
I could
That's
see $2 Peterson
Steve.
As a nibbler.
Who gets the money is my question. Do Ken and I split it? Is that?
We'll have to look into this.
I say we just mail it to Ty Kelly.
Yeah. That's pretty random, but okay.
Just send him like an envelope with $6.
By the end of this podcast, there might be even more. Who knows? At the rate that I'm going. Mm. All right. Well, moving on from David Peterson now. There was Anthony Kay. He had a 1.49 ERA in 66.1 innings with 38 hits allowed, 23 walks issued, and 70 strikeouts. And then he got promoted to AAA. There were some growing pains in Syracuse. But, of course, he was traded to Toronto, and he was assigned to Buffalo. He didn't embarrass himself there. And then when he got promoted to the Blue Jays for a couple of starts, he was solid yet unspectacular. Obviously, he's no longer in the system now, but do we have any parting words, parting advice, whatever, for Anthony Kay and his new Blue Jay team?
Good luck, I guess. Keep spamming that curve.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Good luck, Anthony Kay. Next up is Stephen Valines, and he had a 1.20 ERA in 45 innings. We had 34 hits allowed, 14 walks and 42 strikeouts. And he was promoted to AAA, and he had some trouble adjusting to AAA and the ball there. So stock up, down, or holding?
Down.
Yeah, this makes me sad.
Mm. I'm very sad.
Basically, like, everything that was exciting kind of backtracked.
if the refrain was always, this might not work in the high minors, if it wasn't going to work in the high minors, this is what it was going to look like. Damn it. I had so much hope for you, Valines.
Well, you can counter that in a way by looking at the success that he had in Binghamton and, you know, convincing yourself that the better prospects and whatnot are in AA, whereas AAA is full of just kind of the retreads and guys that, you know, aren't the best major league, aren't maybe the best players to be indicative of major league talent, and obviously that new ball was all wacky. But yeah, it was,
I mean, you'd expect him to be somebody who escapes the new ball effect since he's like got that weird sidearm funky nonsense and gets ground balls, but.
Well, all you just need is to be hit in the air.
Yep.
He gave up a lot of fly balls.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's the other thing, right? Like, when his stuff stops working, guys are going to – when his stuff stops fooling people, guys are going to elevate it, and that didn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, 85-mile-per-hour fastball or so is on a plate.
Batter's eyes kind of go wide, like, ooh. I'm pretty sure everyone who's ever played baseball has experienced that when they like put in a pitcher they you know is not going to throw as hard or as hard as someone you were facing previously, and just like, oh yeah, I can hit this.
And then Jamie Moyer made a career of proving
how the hell.
Well, I don't remember where it was that I remember reading something, but supposedly there is. You know, if you assume like a major league fastball is 90 or so plus, and a batting, you know, a fastball that you could tee off of is about, you know, in the 80s or so, low to mid 80s. Something that is sufficiently slower than that is actually fools batters, just like a fastball with velocity does, because it's just too slow. And part of Moyer's success and other guys that kind of threw really slow fastballs and junk was because of stuff like that, just fooling the batters, but in an opposite velocity. Mm-hmm. All right, next up is Will Toffey, and he hit .219, .347, .349 in 91 games. With 5 homers and 5 stolen bases in 8 attempts. Stock up, down, or holding?
Yeah, holding.
Yeah, I mean, I'm less confident that he's going to be able to hit for the kind of average that would allow the on-base skills to play. But that was pretty much the story last year, so yeah, holding.
I'm still mildly interested because I love guys who have such a mature approach at the plate. Let's put it that way. Like, I'd still be interested to see if he turns into like who was that first baseman for the A's in like the late 2000s, early 2010s? Not a lot of power. Derek Barton.
Mm.
Like a player like that, or something similar to that off the bench. But yeah, he's probably nothing. Just entertaining to me because I like walks.
All right, well, next up is a guy that had a similar walkie season in Ali Sanchez. He hit .278, .337, .337 in 71 games with 1 homer and 1 stolen base. Up, down, what do we got?
I'd say up, honestly. Now let me refresh my memory before I say any other nonsense that's blatantly wrong, which I want to do on this show.
I'd say hold.
Yeah, I'd bump it up a little bit. Like, he improved his batting line going from advanced A to double A. It's not a particularly appealing batting line, but he's a catcher, so...
He's basically the next Tomas Nito.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think Tomas Nito and their like have major league roles for a while. Like, Jeff Mathis kept getting jobs.
Oh, no, he's going to catch forever.
And, like, look, it's always good when you can develop guys like this internally, because then you don't need to waste $3 billion on a backup catcher every year. You just pay someone the league minimum. Spend that money on, like, your bullpen or something.
Yeah, so, like, right.
Yeah, well, the Mets spend that money on a...
I mean, you should want to have a better second catcher than Tomas Nito, but...
I don't even know that I agree with that. I think, like, backup catcher is one of the most... like, overblown
spots on the
roster. It gets
exacerbated because Wilson Ramos really shouldn't be catching every day.
Well, that's a Mets-specific issue.
Really, the Mets have one catcher between the two of them.
That's a fair point.
If they had Yasmani Grandal, sure.
Yeah. I didn't think...
There's value in it. I'm not skeptical that he's going to hit even to Tomas Nito's.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, again, more or less the same profile as last year.
I think he's a better hitter than Tomas Nito is.
That's
in terms
pretty
of
low
just
bar.
Right, yeah, but obviously Nito has a lot more power than Sanchez has ever displayed.
I mean, Sanchez is still what is he, 22? He's heading towards 23. It's not like he's old. Like, he's double 22, 23 as a catcher in double A is fine. Like, dude's still, like, if you could continue to post league average batting lines as a catcher, a decent defensive catcher, that's a nice player. So
I believe that he is eligible for the Rule 5 draft this year. Would you add him? Would you protect him?
Let me think. Who else do they have to add?
I don't think there's any way another team claims him just to... I guess he's a cheap backup catcher.
Yeah, I could see another team taking him.
I think what's more likely is Tomas Nito's going to get sent down at some point, so you're going to need him then. Because Nito's out of options. So, if they're going to go into the season with two catchers... Sanchez is probably the next guy up.
Let me look at the Mets. Who do they have to protect this year?
There are a few guys.
Jimenez, Newton, Sapucki, Sanchez, Humphreys, Mazzaica, Lindsay, and Carpio. I think you protect Jimenez, Sapucki, and Sanchez. I think you protect Sanchez. I don't think anyone would be crazy enough to roster Jervian Newton. See, this is actually a weird, an interesting discussion to have because of the new 26th roster spot, right? That might make it easier for a team to just draft and stash a guy like Jervian Newton. Just say, all right, yeah, you're not going to play it all this year, but you're toolsy. We're going to hold on to you.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not much different losing, like, 90 games with 25 men versus 26. So
yeah, exactly.
If you're a rebuilding team, you could probably really pretty easily, you know, hide an A-ball infielder.
And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing for these guys. Like, I guess they get major league time, but perhaps it stunts their development. That's a long discussion that smarter people than me should have. Still, though, I think you protect Sapucki. Jimenez, obviously, I think you protect Sapucki and Sanchez, and you just hope that no one is bold enough to steal Newton like that.
Honestly, I wouldn't be too concerned. I think we were talking about this on the podcast with Columbia a few weeks ago. I feel like every team has a Newton.
Yeah.
You know, there's... toolsy guys in the lower minors of every team, and nothing really about him stands out as unique.
He's still like a project too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it would be unrealistic to think that he could hit.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it's likely. Yeah.
Yeah, in the old system, I don't think there's any way he would get picked. I'm just intrigued as to what might happen with the new system.
But same thing with Sanchez. I feel like most teams probably have, you know, a kind of solid defender, solid defensive catcher, but, you know, probably light hitting, whatever you want to call it, somewhere in their minors. And I don't think that, you know, Sanchez, anything about him specifically is unique that would want, you know, that would prompt a team to select him other than his, you know, okay season and then proximity to the majors. Well, for every Ali Sanchez, there's a guy like, you know, a Rene Rivera, whatever, who can just be had with a minor league. I mean, with probably a minor league free agent contract.
Yeah, there's not as much upside as a Rule 5 ad would probably have.
No.
You'd have to really buy into him being able to hit, like, 270 and think you could unlock some power.
All right, moving on now. Let's look at Harold Gonzalez. He had a 3.14 ERA in 97.1 innings, allowing 83 hits, walking 23, and striking out 89. And then he's promoted to AAA for about a month and a half or so, and he pitched pretty well there. He posted a 2.68 ERA in 40.1 innings, though his strikeout rate did plummet from 22.8 in Binghamton to 14.3% in Syracuse. So stock up, down, or holding for Mini Pedro?
I'd say up.
Yeah, I'd say up. Definitely up in terms of his.
Pretty good chance he makes the big leagues next year.
Yeah, 100%.
Big league innings next year. So,
well, I believe that he is a minor league free agent at the end of the year. Well,
the end of next year.
The end of the year already came and went.
Yeah. The end of next year he's a free agent, I'm pretty sure.
So they would need to act with him.
Look, they're already talking about Robert Gesellman, fifth starter.
Things could get bleak fast.
Yeah. The thing with Harold is, I mean, his stuff is, you know, that the fastball is, you know, not that great. The secondary stuff is, you know, pretty average across the board. And I think pretty much everybody expected him to kind of, you know, get worse as he climbed up the minor league ladder. And last year he had some time in Vegas and he was not good at all. But surprisingly, he was really good in Syracuse. And I'm not going to say that that the environment in Syracuse is equal to how it was last year in the PCL, because the PCL is its own beast. But obviously, the International League this year was more of a hitter's league than a pitcher's league. And he really, I think, exceeded expectations.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
We'll move on to a guy that now did not live up to expectations whatsoever in Tony DeBrell. And he posted a 9.31 ERA in 38.2 innings, allowing 51 hits, walking 21, and striking out 37. And that was after he posted a 2.39 ERA in 90 innings with St. Lucie. So, night and day.
You said you're getting better at the AV stuff. That'd be a good time to put in that sad trombone effect.
It would be.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, not great.
And the thing is, I was not able to, I didn't see him pitch in person when I saw Binghamton. I don't think anybody else on the team that saw Binghamton saw him pitch. I don't think anybody from our friends over at BP saw him pitch in person, so I don't know what the exact issue was, because he was pretty good in St. Lucie. I think he's a little old in St. Lucie to begin with, so he's probably overpowering, you know, some of those guys down there. But you know, he's logged plenty of innings in college and in the minors, in the Mets system. So it's not like he got tired towards the end of the season. As far as we know, he wasn't injured or anything like that. As far as we know, there weren't any massive, you know, drops in how good the stuff was. So I don't know. It's just
What do you think the fastball was sitting?
I mean, generally he sits in the low 90s. Like I was saying, I did not hear anything saying otherwise. So I don't know. And obviously if there was, you know, if all of a sudden his fastball was like, you know, 87 to 89, then it would be a giant red flag that, okay, something is wrong. But no reports out there about any kind of diminished velocity, no reports about diminished stuff. So I don't know. An odd year for him.
Yeah, very.
A fellow teammate from both teams, though, he didn't really succumb to the same kind of problems that DeBrill had, and that was Kevin Smith. When he was in high A, he posted a 3.05 ERA in 85.2 innings. And then when he was promoted to Binghamton in late July, he posted a 3.45 ERA in 31.1 innings, allowing 25 hits, walking 15, and striking out 28. Obviously, the strikeout rate and the walk rate became a little iffy in those limited innings. But everything else was decent enough. And, you know, we've talked about him a bit on a couple of past shows. He's kind of loogie-ish, but a solid season for him all around.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think he was really on any of our radars heading into the season, right? I don't remember us talking about him too much beforehand.
Nope. Yeah, not really.
I mean, he's still not really on my radar, but
I mean, he's like reasonably close to making major league starts for the Mets.
Yeah, I think that he'll definitely pitch for the team next year.
And yeah, I would imagine that he's not too far away from being like a loogie.
I mean, if Daniel Zamora, I would assume that he gets first crack, but if he does not perform particularly well as a kind of left-handed reliever, then I expect to see Smith.
I think he was, John wrote him up, right?
Yes.
The gif in that, I legit watched like 4 times before realizing it wasn't Daniel Zamora.
Yeah, they are cut from
they
a
look
very
similar.
Very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just now realizing I'm the only civilized person on this pod who correctly pronounces it. Chip.
Nope.
Chip.
That makes no sense.
You can cut this out.
Interface format.
The guy who invented it says it's GIF.
Well, he's clearly wrong.
But no, it's his invention. He gets to call it whatever he wants.
He doesn't. That's the problem.
He totally does.
How do you get GIF from graphic interface format?
Because...
Do we say graphic? I'm pretty sure that we don't.
English doesn't make any sense as is, Steve. He can call it whatever he wants.
That is very true. That is very, very true. Alright, well, were there any other performances from anyone else from Binghamton that you think noteworthy enough to just kind of bring up? I feel like I covered everybody for the most part. I did forget Nicky Janis, but he is an enigma in and of himself, so.
I wanted to bring him up because I just found out he's actually a minor league free agent. I'll be very sad if they don't bring him back.
Yeah, he is the league,
He is the mayor of Binghamton, New York.
Yes, he is the franchise leader in innings pitched, wins, a lot of things belong to him. I would be sad if he doesn't come back, but I don't know. I feel like the Mets will. Because who else do they have to pitch also? Think of it like that.
Mm-hmm. It would always be fun if he had an off chance of making the majors. Were there any knuckleballers in the majors last year even?
I do not believe so.
Because that one Red Sox dude is, like, gone. So I think and Dickey wasn't pitching, so. Shame.
I'm sure maybe a handful of knuckleballs were thrown by pitchers just as kind of one of those, crap, I can't get you out with anything else, let's see if this works kind of situations, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
not, there was no one, as far as I know, though, that is a dedicated user of the pitch. All right. I think that pretty much covers the team and everybody on it. Anybody noteworthy on it?
Yeah, not a great season. Hopefully next year. Well, next year might be.
Next year might be their last.
Yeah, might be their last, and I don't think it'll be a particularly inspiring roster then either, but we'll see.
You're not excited for the Carlos Cortez experience to reach the hot
Yes. Christ.
Had to bring him up.
Of course.
$1 million for, he's like Fancy Pants Luke Ritter, who might not be as good as Luke Ritter.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I feel like Luke Ritter is a better eye.
Yeah, Luke Ritter might be better for like a tenth of the cost.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking.
I think we drafted him once. If we draft him again, he must be good.
If only it worked like that. All right, well, we're going to take another break. When I get back, I'm going to speak with John Troopin about the city of Binghamton itself. Hey, everybody, welcome back. And I'm now joined by someone who wears many hats, John Troopin. In addition to being an amazing Avenue contributor, he's also a contributor over at Lookout Landing. He's a Hardcore Times contributor and a Baseball Prospectus contributor. John, how's it going?
It's going well. How you doing, Steve? Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. So the first thing I want to ask you, very simple. Rumble ponies, yes or no?
I'm a yes. I mean, I'm from the Pacific Northwest, so I'm used to the Aqua Sox. I'm used to the Rainiers. I thought it was a pretty interesting name. It got me to look up what in the world is a rumble pony. I think anything that's a little bit interesting is worth putting into baseball.
Yeah, basically all the finalists in that contest to name the team were pretty interesting. There were the Bullheads, there was the Gobblers, Rocking Horses, Stud Muffins, Timber Jockeys.
It is a little bit strange because like Brandios, I think, is the company now that does like all the rebrands for the minor league teams. So it feels like it's like a little bit too corporate in some sense. But you know, I mean, that one at least like it incorporates some of the local history. You know, the logos are good. I mean, the logos are you know, actually somehow managed to be a little bit intimidating. So you know, I think it's fun. I wonder how you'd feel about it as a player, but I think it's neat.
I mean, I guess better to be a rumble pony than a stud muffin.
Yes, exactly.
If you had the final say, would you have picked one of those other ones over rumble pony?
I like rumble pony. I mean, I think it's stud muffin is bizarre, and I mean, like you know, a few of them they're interesting, but yeah, I mean, there's already like in the league, you know, you got Iron Pigs. I feel like there's a lot of like, you got the sort of adjective noun kind of set up there.
Do you have any ideas for what you would have done? What if you had the option, you know, for a better team name?
Oh man, I mean the Gamblers, right? That would have been kind of fun, or something related there. Because I mean, I know there's sort of like, I don't know if that's like a, you know, you'd get in trouble there, but yeah. I know. If you could go, like,
Kennesaw Man Landis is rolling the grave.
Well, he'll be all right, you know. But like the bingo Gamblers, I feel like that'd be kind of fun. I feel like that's a good way you could go, but they did okay.
All right, so well. The name's all right, but attendance, generally speaking, has not been good for Binghamton. They were at the bottom of the Eastern League this year. They were second to last the year before. They're dead last in 2017 and pretty much dead last going back every single year to 2010. And obviously, Binghamton has seen better days. You know, a large portion of the population is living under the poverty line, and the weather is not the best in the spring for baseball. But you know, do you think there's anything that they could be doing up there to kind of get the fans into the stadium more? Because Trenton and Reading, they have similar median incomes and poverty rate figures and stuff, and they're usually, you know, the top third or so in attendance. A little warmer, obviously, but
it's you'd think it wouldn't be so dramatic. You know, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head. Like, there are other, you know, organizations, there are other places with similar situations. It's not like it's, you know, dirt cheap, but I mean, you know, it's like $10 to get in the stadium typically, and, or, you know, $8 to $10. And I don't know quite how much, like, you know, family day they're doing, or, you know, bringing in a whole bunch of school kids and things like that. But, you know, it's once you're in the ballpark, like, it's one of the nicer ballparks that I've been to. So, you know, it's not going to blow you out of the water with amenities, but I mean, you've got a good view at every seat. They've got a nice little spot. I think that they really miss out on, compared to some of the other ballparks I've seen, is that they don't necessarily have a great setup for, like, the sort of the young adult group of people, you know, who might come out and, like, you'd get some drinks and you'd watch a game. Cause I think, you know, if they're getting, you know, the kids, and they're getting, you know, the sort of school day kind of thing. And, you know, there's only so much you can do with that. But if they had sort of a nice area, maybe either in the outfield or just somewhere, because right now it's like you come in out of the parking lot, there's a little area you can sort of stand, but you can barely see the field if you can at all. It's like there's no reason you should be at a minor league game and not able to see the baseball at all times, right? Like, it's just, you know, yeah. So that, I think that really hurts them. And as you mentioned, I mean, just the economics of the town, unfortunately, are somewhat unavoidable there.
Yeah, so of all the stadiums you've been to, how would you write, how would you rate NYSEG?
It's a little bit of, I would call it actually a little bit above average. I mean, as someone who, you know, who would enjoy, like, having a little bit more, you know, I love a stadium where you can walk around the field, and see it, you know, no matter where you are as you walk around. It kind of sucks to go, you know, have to kind of go underneath the ballpark, essentially be underground if you want to go, you know, go to the team store, go get, you know, some food or things like that. So that's a bit too bad. But I mean, it really is like once you're getting to a seat, like every seat is solid. It's pretty nice. They've got a nice sort of standing room area down the right field line near the Speedy Hut. I went to Lakewood for a couple games this year, which I thought was really nice. I wouldn't put it quite on that level, but, you know, it was one of the nicer spots that I've been to. I think they just need maybe a little more refinement or just some better sort of creativity to get folks in the park.
But you mentioned Speedies, and yes, those are, a Binghamton original, I guess you want to call it. Basically, for anyone that's never had one or heard of it or whatever, it's a shish kebab meat on, like, a roll or a piece of Italian bread, whatever. I've never had one. Are they worth the hype?
I have had one, and it was at the ballpark because they had Speedies, and I said, okay, this is what I got to do. I will say I was a little underwhelmed, unfortunately. I think the idea is solid. I think this particular bit of execution is a little, I mean, should the bread to meat ratio was a little bit rough. It ends up being a little dry. I mean, you know, if you put some sort of, you know, you put something, some garlic, something in there just to kind of keep it from getting dry, it's fabulous. But if you're just essentially putting shish kebab meat on a big old roll, I mean, yeah, you're going to be chewing for a while. that was what I ran into, unfortunately.
So, times that you've been to Binghamton, just how would you rate, you know, the city itself? Good experience, bad experience. It had its own kind of soul, its own kind of beat to it. Mm-hmm.
I like Binghamton. I mean, part of it is to sort of pull back the veil. So I live in Cooperstown, New York right now, which on the one hand is delightful as a, you know, baseball fan. On the other hand, there are literally 1,700 people here. So, Binghamton, it feels like a dang metropolis. Like, Binghamton is the nearest Wegmans. Like, it's where, like, the nearest, you know, a bunch of different grocery stores. I mean, just from a pure, like, functionality standpoint, it's easy to get excited about going to Binghamton when you live, when, you know, there's a price chopper and that's about it. But I mean, no, it was pretty nice. You know, I got some pretty solid just Italian food dinner, one time when we were there. You know, it's a place I'd like to check out more, and I would love for the team to sort of have a bit of a resurgence too, to sort of help draw that in. Cause you know, it's a cool place and it's a reasonably, you know, central spot on the way through the state.
When we've been talking about the teams, other teams, you know, in the system in relation to the cities that they're in and everything, one thing that I've noticed for a couple of the teams, Columbia especially, because it was in a college town, is like the team itself felt secondary to the college. Obviously, Binghamton University is there. It's, you know, one of the more major SUNY schools.
Right.
Do you think that Binghamton University, like the sports aspect of it, kind of outshine the Binghamton Mets? The Binghamton Rumble Ponies?
I don't know. You slipped up there. Oh. I mean, I think it was to some degree. I will say, you know, if there was like a big old signage somewhere, you know, it would be Rumble Pony stuff. I saw a fair number, you know, just as we'd drive down and stop and get coffee, I saw like a lot of Rumble Ponies merch. So I do think like, the outside the box kind of naming thing may start to bear fruit for them just because it did lead to, even though obviously it pulls them slightly away from being the Mets. I think it did sort of draw a little bit more individuality, for them. And I am hopeful that that's going to build into it, but you know, there certainly was, you know, there was a lot of college stuff in the town.
All right. Well, do you have anything you'd like to plug before we go?
I was down at the Arizona Fall League. So I'm, as you know, Steve, I'm finishing up. So there should be something for folks to look at, some of the Mets AFL guys, in the next week or so. So just keep an eye out for that.
Yep. All right, everybody, this is John Troopin. Thank you. Check out all the stuff over at AA and then also look at Landing, Hardball Times, BP. He's all over the place. John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm joined by Lucas and Ken once again. And do you guys have any last words for the week?
Sign Yasmani Grandal.
Promote Harrell.
Literally, that's the only thing I care about this offseason is to sign Yasmani Grandal, but it won't happen and I'll be left heartbroken once again.
Just like last year.
Best catcher in baseball available. Nah.
Listen, when you have the opportunity to upgrade your team, you do not take that opportunity.
Yeah, you upgrade your bank account instead.
Exactly. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you could send us an email at our email address, fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. Or you could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. And Ken is at KenLevin91. Subscribe to our podcast if you already have not. And please rate and review it. And, of course, we thank everybody for listening. And we'll be back next week with a recap of the Syracuse Mets. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.